This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, Music from DePauw. This week, Matt brings us a student corner on the winter term trip he took to England to study Benjamin Britten's War Requiem. It's Music of the 21st Century Week at DePauw, and festival organizer Carla Edwards comes in to give us an overview of the festivities. Anna brings us a student corner conversation with student performers gearing up for the festival chamber music concert. And Craig Paré, Greg Risto, and Orsina Smith talk about the works the band, the choir, and the orchestra have been rehearsing. All as we prepare for the arrival of guest composer John Carigliano. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life.
Hello, my name is Matt Skiba, and this is another edition of the Student Corner. Over winter term, 11 other students and I, along with two professors, went to London to research Benjamin Britten and the War Requiem. With me today, I have Graham Richmond.
Hello.
Scott Perkins.
Hi.
And Leah Williams.
Hi.
So, Professor Perkins, why did you have the idea to organize this trip?
I've absolutely loved the War Requiem as a piece for a very long time. That's something I'm very passionate about. But on top of that, there's a lot you can say about this piece because it's a very deep piece musically. But on top of that, it holds a strong degree of cultural significance. And so there's a lot you can say about it. And I found that it was very easy, actually, to spin an entire three-week course on just this one piece to really get into some depth musically and also learn about World War II, Wilfred Owen, Benjamin Britten, one of the most significant composers and also controversial composers of the 20th century, and about this fantastic piece.
Absolutely. So, Graham, requiems aren't normally pieces we perform. We're usually used to symphonies or movements of symphonies and stuff like that. So what was it like researching one of these larger scale pieces?
I thought it was really interesting to see the degree that Britten went to have symbolic meaning inside of the piece itself. Most of the pieces we've done in orchestra before have been symphonies, stuff like that, where it's a little bit more simple symbolically inside of the piece. But with the Requiem, each and every section really has a meaning inside of each note. And it was just really interesting to delve into Britten's mind and how deep he went with this specific piece.
So Leah, not to call you out or anything, but you were the only non-School of Music student on the trip. So what was this experience like for you?
I learned a lot. I didn't know very much about music. I could read music, but I didn't realize the symbolism that could exist within the notes. The way we talked about how the decreasing amount of notes symbolized loss of innocence. And I also just really enjoyed the experience, and I got to do a lot of things I feel like I wouldn't have done otherwise. I had never even heard of Benjamin Britten before this, and it was an experience I wouldn't have had otherwise. I learned a lot about things I would have never sought out on my own. Mm-hmm.
So I know personally for me, it was the first time leaving the country. So, I mean, my favorite part of the trip was being able to leave and immerse myself in a different culture and see all of these differences and see how so much just really different from the United States. But what would you guys consider your favorite part of the trip?
I think my favorite part of the trip was one of the days where we just got to wander around and kind of discover our own journey inside of London. And we ended up just stumbling upon this just old ship, and it turned out to be Francis Drake's ship. And we just went in and took a tour and just got to walk around inside of it. And it was just one of the cool experiences that you had no idea was going to happen that day. It was just completely unplanned. But I mean, that day was just filled with stuff like that.
That sounds awesome. What about you, Professor?
One of the best experiences for me was visiting Coventry Cathedral. I had been to London before a number of times. I had been to Aldeburgh to do research twice. The one place on the trip we visited that I hadn't been before was Coventry. And knowing that because of the cathedral, the War Requiem existed, since it was commissioned for the consecration, that was a really powerful experience for me.
Yeah,
to actually be there.
And Leah, what about you?
I really loved seeing Benjamin Britten's original handwritten War Requiem. We got to touch it and just like flip through it. And I was not expecting that at all when the lady first brought them out to show us. I didn't think we would get to look through them. And that same day we got to see the original handwritten poem from Wilfred Owen, an early draft, at which we could see the differences between one of his early drafts and what he eventually decided upon. and it was a poem that was in the War Requiem. And I held that too, which is just insane because it was in World War I. It was in like a trench somewhere when he was writing this poem. And then now they have it, and we saw it the same day when we saw Benjamin Britten's original handwritten work.
Yeah, that was a really, really cool experience to see all the written works and kind of just see the whole thing embodied. Well, thank you for coming by the studio today. For anyone that is interested, the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra is going to be performing the War Requiem later this spring, and we'd love to see you there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
From their Deutsche Grammophon CD, the Monteverdi Choir and the North German Radio Symphony Orchestra, under the direction of John Elliott Gardner, perform the Dies Irae from Benjamin Britten's War Requiem.
February brings us
Music of the 21st Century. This is our opportunity as a school to work with a living composer. And organizing our Music of the 21st Century Festival this year is one of our professors, Dr. Carla Edwards, and she's here to chat with me about it. Welcome.
Thank you.
So who do we have coming in this year?
We have a very famous American composer by the name of John Corigliano, who is going to be visiting this year. He resides in New York, has done a lot of music that's won all kinds of awards. He's won a Pulitzer, he's won several Grammys, he's won an Academy Award.
In fact, he just won a Grammy last week, didn't he, or 2 weeks ago?
He did. A recording of his percussion concerto won a Grammy Award. So the guy's amazing, and his music is stunningly beautiful. And so personable and listenable. I think everybody's going to love it.
Some people would say he's probably America's most famous composer.
I think so. There are very few people you can mention his name to and don't know of him. He wrote the movie score for The Red Violin. The score to that is incredible.
Joshua Bell, I think, played that.
Yes, yes. I played the violin part to that. So, I mean, he's had amazing people perform his works.
I think people line up to play his works. You know, they want to be the one that gets to do the premiere of whatever he's got up his sleeve next. Now, what forces here at DePauw will we use to perform his music?
We actually have a lot of different student and faculty groups performing. On Thursday night, February 13th, is a chamber concert in Thompson Recital Hall at 7:30. May Pong will be playing piano. We'll have a lot of the vocal students singing. Pamela Coburn is singing with Ann Reynolds, performing on flute. We have a flute and harp piece being played by a student group. And then the final piece on the program is Poem in October, which Craig Paré is conducting, and it's students and faculty mixed in. And then on Friday, the 14th, Valentine's Day, a great way to spend Valentine's, is a concert in Kresge Auditorium at 7:30. That will be a lot of the larger ensembles, so the band, the orchestra, chamber singers, concert choir, and the performing musical theater will all be doing things.
Wow. So does Corigliano pick the music? Do we pick the music? Do you pick the music? Do the performers? How do we decide who gets to play or perform or sing?
Well, the advantage to a composer like Corigliano is that he's written so many different types of music that he really wrote things for almost every ensemble or every group that we have. So we could really do a lot of different things. Amy Barber, when she was working with the Music of the 21st Century last year, actually started talking with the faculty and students as early as mid last spring, and they were already starting to choose works. So we actually pick them all, and then we run everything past him just to kind of get his okay on things.
So he knows what we're playing when he gets here.
Yes, he does.
Knows what's on our performance list.
Yeah, he and I have been in conversation about that since September. So.
And then when he gets here, does he just come to our concerts?
No, he actually arrives on Sunday night, February 9th, and then on Monday morning, he starts working and coaching with the students and the faculty on an individual basis. And those coachings are open to the public, but they're mostly for the performers so that they can get his ideas and are the tempi right, you know, what are they doing, that kind of thing. So they actually get to almost have like a lesson with him, which is incredible.
Yeah, that to me, that's actually far more exciting than even the performance of his music, is the fact that you get to sit with the composer and really ask, well, so what am I, you know, what is this about? How did you want this performed? To be able to interact with the person that wrote the piece and then carry that with you the rest of your career. When you play that piece or sing that piece the rest of your life, you're going to go, that's what John said about how he wanted his music played.
Absolutely. And he'll be working with all of the groups Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, into Thursday. He's also visiting some of the classes just to talk about his compositions and his life and what got him into composition, that kind of thing. So the students are really going to get to interact with him a lot, which is
great. And we really put those composers through their paces. They're not used to working this hard, I don't know.
I don't know the life of a composer, but we've got him pretty busy all day long. So.
And this festival was started by our former dean, Amy Barber, many years ago, and it is sponsored by Bob and Meg Schmidt, who have made this possible for us for many years, and we're certainly in their debt for bringing us so many great composers, none grander than this year's guest. John Corigliano will be here with us with two public performances here throughout the week, and you're welcome to come by the GCPA at any time and sit in on any of his coachings. But two public performances, one on Thursday night, February 13th in Thompson at 7:30, and one on Friday night, February 14th, that's Valentine's night, and I can't imagine a better way to spend Valentine's Day than to listen to some of this great music. That will be at 7:30 and in Kresge. The schedule for John Corigliano's residency is posted online at our website at www.depaul.edu/music. And again, all events are open to the public. Tickets for the evening performances are available online, and no ticket is necessary for any of the coachings. And we are certainly looking forward to having him on campus, and thanks for making that happen.
Thank you.
From their Koch CD, oboist Humbert Lucarelli and the Brooklyn Philharmonic, under the direction of Michael Barrett, perform John Corigliano's Aria for Oboe and Strings.
Hi, this is student producer Anna Gadula here with another Student Corner. Next week, renowned composer John Corigliano will make a visit to DePauw University for our annual Music of the 21st Century Symposium. Students, myself included, have been selected to perform on the chamber music recital and in the Ghost of Versailles opera scene. Joining me in the studio, I have soprano Julie Strasser.
Hello.
Flutist Josh Levine.
Hi there.
And baritone Blake Lampton.
How's it going?
Are you guys excited for Corigliano's visit?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What are you guys performing?
I am in a quartet with three other vocal majors here called Liebeslied.
What is it about?
Actually, it's to his life partner, and the only words in it are, I love you.
Oh, wow.
So it's just repeating that over and over again in many different ways.
Interesting.
It's pretty intense. I'm playing a piece called Voyage. It's a flute and harp duet.
Oh,
it's
excellent.
Actually fairly traditional for Corigliano, but it's pretty neat.
What do you mean traditional for Corigliano?
It doesn't sound very ethereal. It's a beautiful piece, and that's kind of typically how flute harp duets go.
Excellent.
We're doing a scene from The Ghosts of Versailles, and I'm singing Figaro's aria.
Oh, wow.
It's really interesting because he plays off of all the different characters in all the different operas that were Figaro, and it's
so
really
funny. He takes themes from the Mozart and the Rossini.
Yeah,
That's awesome.
Yep.
Cool. Have there been any particular challenges in preparing Corigliano's music?
Definitely. The rhythms are very, very difficult.
Says the singer.
Yeah.
No problems in my corner. None whatsoever.
No, but it's really difficult, and it takes a lot of running it and working with Greg. Greg Martin is fantastic to work with. He's really helped me out a lot with that.
Greg Martin is one of our staff accompanists, and he's actually my accompanist too, and he's awesome. Any troubles with the quartet?
Yeah, definitely. The rhythms, they're pretty strange as well, and having four of us singing at once, it's easy to get off. In this quartet, there's a lot of runs, so at some points we're all just doing scale-wise motion runs all at the same time, so it's very easy to get off track.
And aren't you guys being accompanied by pianos?
Yeah, it's written for four hands. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in it. It's
a lot of people involved in that one piece. Mm-hmm. Josh, any difficulties?
I've actually never played with a harp before, and so there's difficulties that come with that. There's been a couple notations where she does a run up the harp, and I'm supposed to play in time with the top note. And so even knowing when the top note's about to hit, I've got no clue. And so it's a little difficult there. It takes a lot of run-throughs of specific sections. Mm-hmm. But past that, it's nothing over-the-top difficult.
Excellent. Are you guys at all nervous for his appearance next week?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, anybody who is of that caliber is going to make you nervous.
Right.
I believe he's one of four living composers that's had an opera premiered at the Met.
Oh, wow. Oh, and Ghost of Versailles is one of them, right?
Yes, yes.
So you have a lot to live up to there, Mr. Figaro.
I'm a little nervous, to say the least.
Are you guys at all nervous for the chamber concert?
Yeah, definitely. So I performed with Joseph Schwantner and Libby Larson last year, but that was always with a large ensemble. I've never done it soloistic like this, so yes, I'm definitely nervous about it.
That's a great opportunity, though.
Yeah, I hope that we're doing this piece justice, because it seems like it has some meaning for him, definitely.
Right.
So, yeah, I hope that we're all practicing it right now in the way that he wants.
Exactly. Well, thanks, guys, for coming. And the chamber music concert featuring Corigliano's works, so Julie and Josh and myself will be on that concert, will be next Thursday at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. The concert, including the Ghost of Versailles scene, is Friday night at 7:30 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium. That concert will also include the large ensemble works by Corigliano. Thanks, guys, for coming, and good luck next week.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah.
From their Naxos CD, violinist Michael Ludwig and the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, under the direction of Joanne Folletta, perform the pianissimo scherzo movement from Corigliano's violin concerto, The Red Violin. Thank you.
We've been talking about our Music of the 21st Century Festival coming up this week, and joining me in the studio to talk about the role of our university band in that process is our university band director, Dr. Craig Perret. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dr. McCoy.
So when any band director thinks of John Corigliano, Circus Maximus comes to mind, which is a huge, crazy piece for a billion players. Mm-hmm. And they don't know that he also wrote some other great works for band. What are you guys playing?
Gazebo Dances, which was originally a piece for piano four hands, and then a transcription of one of the movements from his first symphony, the Tarantella movement. For any of us that haven't played or really heard live Circus Maximus, most of us know him by Gazebo Dances.
Mm-hmm. And Gazebo Dances is really a beautiful, mm-hmm. and to me, a refreshing change of pace for band literature.
It is. It's accessible to the audiences. It's great to study because there's a variety of things that are different about these dances. One of the things I was relating to the university band the other day was he's never consistent or symmetrical all the time, mm-hmm. in any of these movements rhythmically, except in the Tarantella, but even then he'll throw in an extra beat in a measure to kind of throw off a left-right feel or a symmetry to the rhythm there, but definitely not in the first three movements. He's always throwing different meters and different accentuations, different feels for the rhythms as well.
It's a remarkable opportunity for our students to get to know the music of one composer, because in this concert we will hear many different styles of music performed mm-hmm. by many different ensembles. So this concert is on Friday night as mm-hmm. part of the large ensemble performances. So you've been working on this music for a few weeks, I assume, or a few rehearsals, and then you'll also get some with Corigliano himself, correct?
That's right. We read it before we left for break and began in earnest when we got back for second semester. We'll have this week to work on the pieces alone, and then a week from today, he'll actually be with us to coach through the Gazebo Dances in the one movement of the Tarantella.
So is that nerve-wracking to be working on the composer's work while the composer's standing on stage next to you?
It is. Maybe it just seems like there's been a little less time this year to get ready for the composer, but to get back from a long break and then to jump right in and know that within a few weeks, we not only have to have a performance ready, but the composer's going to be looking over our shoulders is intimidating, and yet I was sending a note out to high school band directors inviting them to this event, and as I wrote, I thought, goodness, how many undergrads get a chance to work with composers like John Corigliano?
Right, and we're talking about creating musicians for the 21st century, and here they have two remarkable opportunities to prepare themselves as 21st century musicians. One, that there is an incredibly short window of time to prepare a piece of music, mm-hmm. and that professional musicians deal with all the time. Mm-hmm. And two, to deal with a new piece of music and the composer in the room.
The other aspect, too, is when the composers are here, they'll often change their mind or reinterpret a change of tempo or an accent or something that's expressive about the music, saying that we've tried to stay true to what they want to do, but no, I really meant, and it's a chance for the students to have to react and change right then and there in front of the composer when they're really looking for something different other than what the black and white piece of paper on their stand.
Absolutely right. And it brings the music to life, literally to life, mm-hmm. because there's a living human being here talking to you about it. I remember a conversation where Alfred Reed said that he felt the Armenian dances tempi were sacred, that he had written them exactly like that, and those were exactly the right tempi mm-hmm. earlier in his career. And then later in his career, he was conducting them, and nobody missed them further than he did, you know, mm-hmm. because after he'd known the piece for that long, he found other tempi that worked for him. And as the conductor, he got to choose, and he shifted it up. And mm-hmm. you can't translate that stuff on the paper.
Right.
You need the composer in the room with you to make that happen.
And they admit that when they're with us. And yet we turn to them as, well, this is what we have when you're not here. So it's often a really good discussion of where they need us to take a step forward as artists and interpreters of their mm-hmm. music. One of the other things, too, that's very interesting was one of the first rehearsals, I turned to the group and I said, well, here's a composer who's faced the New York Philharmonic, the Los Angeles Philharmonic, the University of Texas Wind Ensemble, these major ensembles around the world, and now he's going to be in front of you, the mm-hmm. DePauw University Band. How are we going to present his music to him?
Right.
And I wanted to challenge them to think it's not just us and John Corigliano, it's John Corigliano and everyone he's ever worked with. Now he's listening to the DePauw University Band.
Absolutely right. I remember the first time I played Beethoven in an orchestra, and I was so totally taken by the fact that Beethoven wrote the note that I was playing. Now, you know, Beethoven, long dead, wrote that note, and I'm about to play it. But when the composer's standing right there in front of you, and you're thinking, well, he wrote that note, and when he wrote that note, he had this certain sound and this certain timbre and this certain approach that he wanted. Boy, the pressure's on. How are the students responding to that pressure?
Every rehearsal is a step forward in progress, not only in learning their parts and hearing the rest of the piece, but really getting some of the colors he's looking for. For example, the winds and brass in this movement from his first symphony have to gliss up and down, play harmonics, play with a scream sound, and really go beyond what their normal sounds are. And it takes advanced technique. In fact, at a couple of rehearsals, I'd said, take this next time you go to a lesson. Bring this to your teacher. Notice some of the things that they do. Every one of your teachers can play these well. And I've put up good recordings, reference recordings, for the students to hear as well. But for them to suddenly turn around and play at the professional level for what the composer's used to hearing, I think is an appropriate challenge.
Absolutely. And I know we're going to rise to it. I look forward to your performance. It's going to be an exciting concert. It's on Valentine's Day night, and it will be at 7:30 in Kresge. Many works will be featured. Many ensembles will be featured. And our university band and Dr. Perret will be bringing us the Tarantella and the Gazebo dances. Thanks for coming in to chat about
Thank you.
From their Chandos CD, I Musici di Montreal, under the direction of Yuli Turovsky, performed the Scherzo movement from Corigliano's Second Symphony. Thank you.
In this episode of Music for Life, we've been chatting about our exciting week ahead with Music of the 21st Century, which involves the entire School of Music. And here to chat with me about our finale concert is both our orchestra conductor, Orsina Smith. Welcome.
Hello.
And our choir director, Greg Risto.
Hi.
You folks have been working on this music for, well, you've known about the music for a little while, but you haven't been working on it for very long. Is that correct?
We did make choices last year to find music that could accommodate the style of this whole festival, a progression of music of different kinds. So, yeah, I think we pretty much hit the nail on the head in finding the music that John himself really wants to hear.
And also, you know, of course, this comes up very quickly at the beginning of the spring semester for us. And so I know in your case, you did the Promenade last fall to help start that. And similarly, I started Fern Hill with the choirs at the very end of last fall. We have just a little bit of time after the holiday gala is over.
Right.
And so we've started prepping some of this. With chamber singers, we toured with Corigliano's L'Invitation au Voyage so that we
had
some
experience. So you sang that in Mexico?
We did, yep.
Oh, yep. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. How'd it go over?
Really well. It's a beautiful piece. The harmonies are rich and a little bit exotic in their sound. It almost sounds Spanish at times. It's really quite lovely.
As you may have heard last week in the student corner with the chamber singers talking about their tour, our choir was on tour in Mexico last winter term and had the opportunity to perform some of this music. And the orchestra did the Promenade, which is a really fun piece.
Right. I think Corigliano talks in his own comments about the fact that he was blindsided by hearing the Haydn Farewell Symphony, which is kind of a hallmark of... Well, it's a lot of different things, kind of union busting, et cetera. But Haydn wrote the end of a symphony in which the musicians finish playing and they get up and leave one by one, even before the piece is done, so that there are only two players left on the stage at the end. He was trying to get a point across to his employer, a story for another time. Well, he was quite taken by that, and he decided that an orchestral version of that would be fun to do for full orchestra, modern orchestra. This was written in the early 80s. In reverse. So actually, there is no orchestra on stage at the beginning, except for a couple of percussionists, and one by one, each of the sections comes and plays a fanfare and processes on to the stage so that it's full at the end. And there's a surprise at the end, which people have to come and see.
Right, you've got to come to see what that is. Yeah, so the Farewell Symphony in reverse in this Promenade was great fun, which is, you know, PDQ Bach also did this idea of writing something in reverse. So instead of the unfinished symphony, he wrote the unbegun symphony. But this, that's also a story for another time. So with the choir, how are they feeling about the composer standing in the room while they're rehearsing? Because you will also be coached by the composer.
Right, yeah. And, you know, I think all of us are always a bit nervous about that, in particular with Corigliano, who's such a well-known vocal composer, being one of the few living composers to have written an opera that was performed at the Metropolitan Opera, for instance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've got our notes together, we've got our rhythms together, and we're starting to make real music with it. So I think the kids are pretty excited to hopefully be able to show him a good product.
And how's the orchestra feeling about rehearsing in the presence and then finally presenting the work for the composer?
Well, I mean, I think to Greg's point, the orchestra feels the same pressure, but from a different direction. They received a document from me that's 6 pages long that I happen to have today, but of course we're not in video TV land, so we can't show that. But it talks about how Corigliano was the son of a concertmaster of the New York Philharmonic. He went to performances of the New York Philharmonic and saw his dad sitting there playing. He then wrote this clarinet concerto, which the second movement of it, which is what we're doing, the elegy featuring Randy Solomon, our faculty clarinetist, is dedicated to his father because his father had passed away 2 years before he wrote the concerto. But at the end of this second movement, which is very desolate and sad and exquisite, the violin creeps into the clarinet solo and there's this little dialogue and then it dies away. And so it's very emotional. And I think the kids feel the pressure of the fact that, one, Corigliano wrote this thing for the New York Philharmonic. Stanley Drucker was playing the solo, Leonard Bernstein was conducting, but Corigliano's dad was the concertmaster, and he'd seen so many highlights of his father's life watching performances of the New York Philharmonic. So the clarinet concerto is a very powerful link for the students emotionally to kind of connect to the composer.
So is there a moment in this music, such as the one you just mentioned, that you're really looking forward to? Oftentimes, I know when I really delve into one composer's work, these moments come to life and you think, oh, that, I can't wait to bring that to the stage. This is going to be that great moment. Have you found those? You've already toured some of this music through Mexico, and now you're going to add to it and work with John on it. Is there something there?
For me, there is one particular moment in Fern Hill, which is the text at that moment is, before the children green and golden follow him out of grace. And the entire poem speaks of the idea that even from our youngest age, as we play joyfully in our youth, even from that moment, we are already dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a magical powerful moment where the orchestra drops out and we get a cappella that follow him out of grace. And then the orchestra comes back in with just this most exquisitely delicate melody at that mm-hmm. point. And for me, that's just one of the most magical moments that he's written.
For the orchestra?
Yeah, the same. There are a couple of moments. One is in Promenade, where he sneaks in, and amidst all the chaos of everybody coming in an improvisatory way, and we talk about our 21C elements and mm-hmm. getting students to get outside the box of the, you know, play your right notes at the right time, there creeps in a beautiful melody amidst this chaos. And then there's a big climax at the end where it's all replete together. All the improvisations crystallize, and this big melody is played at the same time. Then in the clarinet concerto, there's a moment where there's almost a hero-like melody that creeps into this very desolate music. And it just is there for one time, and then an augmentation, and then it just dies away. And it's like, amidst all the desolation, there was how Corigliano viewed his father as a hero figure.
Yeah, here's some great moments that you can hear on our stage on Friday night. This is on Valentine's Day evening at 7:30 in Kresge Auditorium. As we've said earlier in the show, the residencies are open and they're online. You can find them online and come to any of those. The evening concerts are Thursday and Friday nights at 7:30, and those tickets are also available online or in our box office here in the GCPA, and we would love to have you come and enjoy this great music, and thank you to the two of you for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rounding out the episode, let's return to I Musici de Montreal's recording of John Corigliano's Second Symphony, this time from the closing postlude movement.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePaul Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePaul Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gatdula, Matt Skiba, Rachel Clark, Katie Sherman, and Burke Stanton. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
It's Music for Life.